All right. We're recording.
Excellent. Oh. Okay, just coming out of Santa Rosa. All gassed up. We can go all the way to the crash site without any further troubles. 7 o'clock at night. And I just finished listening to a podcast episode from Quick Media. I think the guy's name is Greg Madsen, and he was talking with another fella. I apologize for not knowing his name right off the bat. Talking about the problems that we face in this life. They were mostly talking about Marxism, and of course that I always equate that with socialism. Not quite sure that's appropriate. Not quite sure if that's correct. But very much. Me personally, very much against Marxism. You know, when you're young and the world looks so daunting, and you don't know how you're going to face things, it's really easy to get sucked into some kind of socialism. Because it sounds so good. And on the surface, it seems so alluring. You know? We all come together, we work together. No one person has to really work very hard. And, you know, it seems really marvelous. I don't want to just jump right in and say, hey, it doesn't work, it's never worked. Except on extremely small scale. You know, it has to be an incredibly small village to make this happen. And the funny part is that it's always, put forward as a, by people who are very big, you know, who have, like, say, for instance, Hillary Clinton. She wasn't campaigning to be the leader of your village. You know, at the time she was a senator. And her greatest aspiration was to be a president. And when you think about these sorts of situations where, and all socialism, it doesn't matter how you flavor it, it doesn't matter how much you kind of paint it one way or the other. And goes, oh, we don't use the term communist anymore. And you go, well, but that's what it is. That is the rule of the commune, the community. You give yourself to the commune, to the community, and it's supposed to take care of you. And I'm sorry to say that when it comes to human nature, among people who pretty much the only description you can have to it is to say people who are celestial sorts. This really appeals to the celestial sorts, because the celestial sorts have learned a wonderful thing. At least it's wonderful for them. Any of you who went to school and had some teacher who seemed to like to do group projects, it was all the rage there for a while. I guess I was really lucky and I didn't get too involved in group projects. And I'm kind of glad. Usually, and the few times I was involved in group projects, I mean, people wouldn't be my friend typically, but everybody liked, okay, I had a friend, or some fella that I knew from school, and he's a nice enough guy, so I don't feel any animosity to anybody. He said, I remember you from school. We went to like middle school together. I was a horrible athlete. He was a really good athlete. And he said, hey, I remember you. And he said, you were really, really smart. And I was like, oh, well, I got really, really good grades. And I suppose I'm really, really smart. But, you know, for group projects, people like grabbing me for group projects because I was, you know, one of the big things was I didn't really care about doing all the work. You know, other people would just kind of show up, I guess, and I would, you know, and I would do a good chunk of the work. I wouldn't say I do all of it, you know. I'm not totally against group projects. But you have to know that in these collective sorts of situations, the people who are the most excited about collectivism, which is what socialism and communism and Marxism is, it's a collectivist thing, which means that you pull what everybody does together and, you know, everybody gets to share the fruits of that labor. And the people who like collectivism the most are people who don't really want to have to work very hard. You know, it sounds really wonderful when it's like, hey, you know, I've got this ranch and I've got all these cattle and it's calving season and, you know, it's kind of traditional to where I come from. It's such a big job that you usually get all of your neighbors, the other ranchers, your friends, to come and help you during calving season. Now, the whole deal is it's kind of just a mutual deal that you help your neighbor, and your neighbor's going to come and help you. And when that, and if there's some person that takes advantage of the, you know, collective labor, but doesn't really put anything into the pot, you know, it's not. You just don't invite that person to help you anymore, and you don't go and you help them. They're on their own. And you could say, oh, that's a collectivist thing, but you go, no, because you can go into it and out of it, you know, quite easily. It isn't some kind of weird death march, which when you take these things to a community level or a state level, and you have something of an investment in things, and you're kind of stuck with these people whether you really want to be or not, kind of a situation, it gets really interesting. Really, I don't know if it happens quickly or not, but you start noticing the people that pull their weight and the people that don't. And then you see the people who really go out of their way, and you can see them as really wonderful people, you know, the ones that really do above and beyond the call of duty, but you're not going to see too many of them in kind of a collectivist thing. You tend to see them in a religious context, especially among Christianity. Among Christians, is that they will do those things because, you know, Christ told you to love your neighbor and to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and it usually goes to the next level of, you know, I need to help my neighbor without any thought for reward. And that works okay when you really are in control of yourself. And when you give of yourself. When you're part of a collective, you're essentially owned by the collective. All of your labor is owned by the collective, and they can put you to work. You know, the group altogether can put you to work in any way they see fit, and you really don't have any control over it. And That's really the essence of it. Is who controls it? Do you control it? If you control it, then it's you being charitable, which is a blessing and wonderful, and God smiles on you and blesses you. If it's part of a collective, you're kind of a serf to that collective, and there's nothing coming of it at all. Everybody feels like that it's all equitable, and you're not doing a charitable act, although God might very well view it that way if you're lucky. But it isn't you volunteering it. I think that is a big part of it is that you need to be able to volunteer it because it's yours. When it's part of a collective, it isn't yours anymore. You're just another employee of the collective on some kind of weird barter exchange. And you don't control it, but the collective controls it. Now, you can try to make it so that you feel like you're doing it yourself, but you're always in trouble if you're not giving enough. Trust me, nobody's going to pat you on the back and tell you how wonderful you are for being helpful. It's just you're due. You better do it. You know, if you're not putting out what people think you should be putting out, you know, you won't get food. Anyway, so that's always the way that I've approached socialism, communism, Marxism, is it's all a collectivist thing. Everybody holds everything else in common. And, you know, once you hear that in, like, the scriptures, everybody says, well, that's what Christianity and Christ is really leading to, is this kind of collectivism. And you go, no. It's always what you're willing to give, what you're willing to do. Anyway, so they've been talking about this and about how they say, you know what, this is a different worldview. And you go, and we can't live together with these people. That's why they say, I think there's going to be a war. When people say there's going to be a civil war, it's going to be, I'm not into civil wars. I'm into wars of independence. If 25 people want to abandon the Constitution of the United States and become a collectivist state, and I'm one of two people who wants to take what I have, my land, my stuff, and I want to continue to operate through far more voluntary exchanges, far more voluntary working together, that we can go into and come out of without shotguns, you know? That's the way I'm always going to go. And us two people will go off and say, well, in this part of the country that we own, it's going to be free and we don't participate in this stuff if we're giving up our liberty and our sovereignty to do it. If people want to have socialism, if people want to have communism, that's their business. But I'm not going to do it. And you can't, well, and that'll be the problem. If somebody says, well, we've got 51% of the population we've bullied and cullied into voting for this, and we're going to win, it's like, well, then we're going to take up arms, and we're going to fight a battle. And whoever wants to come along with us, we'll all start a new nation with under constitutional principles. We're not going to succumb to this, no matter how beautiful it sounds. No matter how wonderful it sounds, no matter, you know, because I'm sorry, you know how they win this is they grab these young people who are scared, and they tell them, well, we will make sure that you have free health care. we'll make sure that there are free schools. We'll make sure that everything that you really need is free. We'll even make sure that you have a house, a place to stay. And that's really alluring to people. Especially when they're scared to death if they're going to be able to make it happen. But I'm not going to say, or I should say, sorry, I will say, that a lot of media, even when it doesn't, when it tries to come out and say, you know, they're constantly saying, oh, this is going to be the time when people aren't going to be able to buy houses anymore. They'll never be able to leave home. They'll never be able to do this, do that. And then you start saying, hey, but you know what? If we tell our government that they can have everything, if they offer us this stuff in return, now, back in the old days, it used to be the rich people versus the poor people, the bourgeois against the proletariat. That's tricky in America right now, although they're working really hard and really well to convince everybody that they really want to go into this kind of a situation before it gets even unpleasant. And that's what they're hoping for. The government will seize all this stuff and divvy it up and give it back to you, but in doing that, you will be beholden to them, you know. It's actually their land. You're allowed to rent it, or, you know, or the rental will be very low, or it will be zero if you're a certain kind of person, especially from one of those groups, you know. You say, well, I'm being oppressed because I have a dark skin. I'm being oppressed because, you know, I would prefer having sex with my same gender and, you know, and not really have kids because, you know, the propaganda, the way the media has spun this has so terrified everybody that, you know, people don't want to have kids anymore. People are scared to death to get married because, you know, they don't want to be beholden to anybody. They don't want to have responsibilities and the kind of respectability that comes with taking upon yourself responsibilities like this. Don't listen to them. They are trying to talk you into something. And the basic thing they're trying to talk you into is, if we can keep them away from each other, if we can turn sex into just, like, hunger, you know, I'll give you a piece of bread and a sexual encounter, and you'll be fine, you know, and you're going, all right, well, is that what it's all about? No, but it's a facsimile. It's a cheap facsimile. If you can scare everybody into thinking that they're not going to make it outside of collectivism, then they'll vote it in. They'll say, please, please, give it to us. You know, and you can use the whole thing. I'm tired of seeing that rich guy up on the hill who's enjoying life and has a nice car and stuff like that. That's not fair. I don't get those things. And you're going, collectivism isn't going to get you those things either. But they'll certainly take it away from that guy and ruin his life. And I guess that might make you feel better. You know, well, we're all suffering equally now. And you're going, nothing's ever equal. Trust me. People will take advantage. They'll find ways to game the system so that they can have something that other people won't tend to have. This is just the telestial nature. Sad but true. And I've often come back and talked about how I think the celestial kingdom might look, and certainly the kind of people that will be there and the kind of attitude that will prevail there, which is no consequences. You can do that's what people look at as freedom and liberty now, and why they want democracy is so they can get 51% of people to basically get rid of all laws except the one that says you can take everything from wealthy people and distribute them to everybody else by force. Easier, just kill them. And then you can distribute it everywhere. You know, that would be the only rule. But yeah, that's really the whole thing. There's no consequences to anything. And I've always pictured this as being kind of everything's plastic. You know, you get a Christmas tree, a fake Christmas tree, and I don't mind. I mean, I've got a fake Christmas tree. Because I'm not into chopping down a tree every year and having it shed the needles and be a horrible mess and then trying to get rid of the darn Christmas tree every year. Makes me nuts. I'm not into it. But yeah, so you get kind of a plastic thing. You know, and it looks like a tree, but it's plastic. Now, the great thing is you don't have to water it. You don't have to maintain it. You have to take care of it. You can put it in storage and bring it back out year after year after year, and it's really kind of nice. And over time, even though you probably paid maybe a few hundred dollars for that Christmas tree, as you kind of make sure that Christmas tree doesn't fall apart, as you keep it coming, it ultimately costs less than buying a succession of actual trees that you bring into your house or whatever. Yeah, Christmas particularly, but that's okay. You know, oh, it's the birth of Christ. You go, why don't we celebrate wildly like this for Easter? A much more important holiday. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The commercialization is there. I don't know if we'll really ever get rid of it. And I think my wife would throw a major hissy fit if I said, you know what, let's just skip Christmas. You know, we want to exchange gifts, great. Why do we have to go through all this stuff? It's just this thing. Really into it. It's fun. She likes it. And I'm willing to help her, because having Lisa be happy is more important than a whole bunch of stuff. I gotta tell you. Anyway, so that's kind of how the celestial kingdom, I think, is gonna be like, and it's gonna appeal to a certain kind of person, which says, you know, it can't be torn up. And that's basically what people get punished for, is tearing up things and hurting people. Well, after this life and after one's resurrected, you can't hurt people anymore. At least you can't hurt them physically, I guess. And, you know, you'll probably be living in some kind of a dwelling that probably harkens back to some of the more inhumane sort of hotels and motels that were coming out of Japan once upon a time. And these And I really do picture it that way. A lot of indestructible rubber, a lot of indestructible kind of concrete and plastic. You know, you can burn down that forest and nothing will happen to it. It'll make burning down forests very boring because it just doesn't, you know, the fire doesn't catch. Nothing really gets hurt. I don't know how those people will feel, but it'll be better than it is here, you know, because here, you know, people can break in and steal your stuff in your house. For all I know, you just won't have any stuff to steal anymore. That's kind of the collectivist utopia, is, you know, you won't own anything. Therefore, if somebody comes and takes your stuff, what does it matter to you? It wasn't your stuff to begin with. You know, go and put in a new requisition to get yourself a new version of this thing. Now, you know, as time passes, at least in our world, things get cheaper and crappier and stuff like that. You know, now, I don't know if that's true in the celestial precincts, how that goes. There's a wonderful guy in Vaughan just drove by. I'm just getting into Vaughan, and he just grabbed somebody. He's really big on the speed limit here. I didn't have a ticket in years until I drove through here, and I was going like 3 miles over the speed limit. And he nailed me, and it cost me $83. Anyway, so. So I need to make sure that I'm not going over 40 here. Although I know there's only one of them here, so he's out being busy over there. I don't have to worry about it too much. But I don't want, I just don't want to worry about it. Anyway, so I don't know how it's going to be. I haven't had some wonderful vision. It's just kind of a concept of, it kind of came out of the whole concept of no consequences. You want to have a situation, and people. Joseph Smith said that if people could see the celestial kingdom, they would kill themselves to get there. And I don't know if that's kind of apocryphal. I'm not sure. Regardless, I know a lot of people would love to live in a world that they've had some bad things happen, some bad circumstances. A lot of things you wouldn't have to get worried. Boy, there is another sheriff out there. Glad I was doing under 40. Because he's sitting there just waiting. It's like, that's the basic thing police do here, is stop people who break the speed limit. Interesting. Regardless, I know a lot of people who would be very interested in doing that. They're tired of getting into trouble for being just who they have decided they're going to be. This is what I am, you know. And boy, do I want to go to a place where they'll just leave me alone and let me do what I want to do. So I don't know if they'll let you smoke there. I don't know. Is it going to be the kind of place where people kind of rule over things and rule over you, and there's a lot of police and things like that? I don't know. By and large, I'm really kind of hoping that it's the kind of place where it's like, you know, we just don't have the capability. You know, a whole lot of telestial things are caused by passions. And I think that that's going to be a feature of a telestial resurrected body, is that a lot of those passions just won't be there anymore. Whatever chemicals cause that to happen, it just won't be there. I don't know what, you know, that seems like that'll change a lot of people and make them different. I don't know. I don't know how that works. I know they won't be able to have children. Almost, well, if you take it just by the different kinds of places you can go, only the very, 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 very top place that you can go has an increase, has a procreative power. And I'm saying, you know, they said they're going to remember back when they were on Earth, and you know, it was great. You know, sex is fun. I don't know if sex will still be fun, but it will certainly be unproductive. Everybody who says, "Oh, I'm going to be so excited because of everybody, all of them, everybody will be sterile." And you can have all the fun you want to, and nothing, no responsibility comes from it. I don't know how that'll ultimately pan out, but I kind of hope so. Now, anyway, so I've always kind of pictured the terrestrial kingdom, which is the middle kingdom, being... You know, when people talk about, oh, I just dream of the socialist utopia. And you go, I think, I won't be surprised if that's the socialist utopia, is the terrestrial kingdom. Everybody's in common. You know, the people that it wouldn't work for, they won't have it, you know. It won't work that way. It'll work some other way. And I'm certainly a guy who thinks that the top level is the most hated and vilified social form that's ever been. Which is kind of a monarchy. Number one, Christ is our king. Now, he's a great king. He's a wonderful king. Never takes advantage of you. Never takes more than what's needed. And those who most stridently follow him, they get to be kings as well. I think that's in the Bible. I don't think that's even strange off the wall Latter-day Saint scripture. I don't think that's the Book of Mormon any more than it is also in the Bible, that this is what is promised to those who are the most righteous, is that they will have all the stuff. Now, they will share it. They will be good rulers. You'll say, oh, I love being under that ruler because they're wonderful. You know? However, I guess there isn't really a however. It's just that there's not going to be very many people there. It's not that it's a pyramid scheme, because it's not. as many people as qualify for it can have it. It's not like, well, we only have five slots, and you were number seven. You're really good, but you didn't make it. There are as many slots as people who qualify for it, which would make you feel pretty good. Is it a competition? No, it's not a competition. But then they go, oh, well, then we all, it's all a, you know, everybody is always so binary about this. It's not like men and women, which is a binary. Hello. It is this thing that says everybody can have it. Everybody can have it. It isn't a limited supply product, which means it falls right off of the economy of the earth. If you're into land, if you're into power, if you're in possessions, stuff like that, you're going to be really hard-pressed to be able to understand that you don't have to have sour grapes, the old sour grapes story. If you can't reach it, you know. Well, they were probably sour anyway. So, you know, it's not worth my effort. And it's usually done when it comes to something that you don't think it's possible for you to have it. That's what a lot of the collectivist stuff ends up being, is taking advantage of people's natural proclivity to think that there are external forces that keep you from having the things you need or the things that you want. And that's what it feeds off of, is it says, you know what, hey, you're right. You can't have that. You know what, it's that person's fault, or it's those people's fault. And if you support me, or if you support our group, what we're trying to do, you can have those things, because we'll take it away from those rich people, or we'll kill them, we'll take all their stuff, whatever, and we'll give it to you. And it's usually a lie. They will definitely take out that other person. You know, look at that guy with that nice car. You don't have a nice car, but everybody should have a nice car. Therefore, we're going to kill him and, you know, and take his nice car, and we'll make 1,000 more of them, and we'll give one of them to you. Maybe. Of course, they don't ever say the maybe part. Usually, it's never going to happen. Because even if you kill every single rich person, take all their stuff, and divvy it up among everybody, it's not all of a sudden going to make everybody rich. Because it's not really an economic thing. It has more to do with, you know, you're just poverty stricken. This is what happens to people. You start ending up in a bread line, in a soup line. You're going, is this? This isn't the advertised result that we were looking for. But once you've done it, there's nothing to stop people from saying, and if you want your bread, get into this line. And if you want some soup, get into this line. Everybody says, where's my chicken? Everybody promised there would be a chicken in every pot. Where's my chicken? And they go, well, go over to that chicken place, and until the chickens run out, you might get a chicken. And then you get up to the you know, everybody stays in that line because they just don't know. And then all of a sudden you get to that counter and you go, I'm here for my chicken. And they go, ah, we already ran out of chickens a long time ago. Why didn't you tell me? And you go, because we didn't want to riot. And it's, you know, and that's the way it is. You're a person that belongs to this state. And if the state says you don't get a chicken, you don't get a chicken. And there might be 10 chickens still back there being kind of hoarded for certain special privileged people who are more important than you are. Uh-oh, so much for the collectivism. There, it really never happens. It always ends up getting stratified. Just stratified along different lines that you're not accustomed to. How come the person in Black Lives Matter, which was a Marxist organization, how come the person that ran BLM had several houses? Did she need several houses? Although she was very Marxist, she was enjoying very much being privileged, which under the old regime, which she was fighting, and that was the whole reason for her fight, was to take down the old regime. It didn't work out for you. Did things improve for you? No. Did things improve for them? Yes. Having a big Black Lives Matter street painting thing, I'm sure you could have cheered, going, this is wonderful, wow, our lives matter now. And then you go, okay, but what happens the next day? And you go, I thought this was supposed to make my life fantastic. It's kind of like the whole promise of Barack Obama. I remember at a press conference, a lady, I saw this on TV, or I listened to it on the radio. I wasn't watching much TV at the time. Lady came up, and she was mad, or no, it was a rally with Barack Obama. He was the president of the United States. And this black lady came up, and she goes, I've got all these bills. You know, she brought her bills. And she said, I voted for you, and you were supposed to take care of me. And look at all these bills I have. And he said, oh, well, here, let me, you know, come talk to this person over here, and they'll help you. And you're going, and did she ever get her help? No. Or she didn't get helped enough, or whatever. Whatever she felt like she had been promised, or what she felt like she was going to get upon getting a president into office that looked like her, sort of. And, everybody gave her the idea that she wasn't going to have the problems that she had before, that the problems that she had were caused by evil, mean, old white guys who hated black people and wanted to see them suffer. And when she thought that maybe those guys were gone in favor of a sophisticated-looking mulatto man that touted himself as black, that was going to profit her, you know, and that the problem was a lack of understanding. And you go, no, the problem was the lack of understanding. He got the power. He said about how the world was going to be a better place with somebody like him in it. And you go, no, he just got rich and he just started caring just as little as anybody else ever did about it, which is what collectivism tends to do. And when you ask for it, that's what you get. is a bunch of, well, thank you for your vote, and it didn't do anything. Things didn't get better. Anyway, so all this works a lot better, not with collectivism, but with Christianity. Oh, I got a moth in here. Damn. Okay, here. Let's see if we can get this moth to go away. Go away? Fine, just go away. Go away. Oh, that was my turn. I've been missing this turn lately. Anyway, so they came back and they said, you know what? The thing that's really going to work here is, and is there going to be a war about this? And you go, probably. And you go, why? He says, because. He says, this is, you know, these aren't people that can live together. It truly is a civil war this time around. Socialism, or better, collectivism, doesn't work unless everybody is in it. Unless everybody's in it. Now, we're trying hard in the United States to collectivize more people. Smash down the middle class. To, you know, because that's going to keep things running for a little bit under the collectivism after you put everybody in crappy public housing. And all of your middle class people have to live in crappy public housing too. And then you find out that there are gated communities, which are 5,000 times better and nicer. And the way you get to go see them is if you're on the crew that cleans the houses of your betters. And you're going, oh. And that's what feeds the collectivism in the first place, is phrasing it that way. And you're going, is it going to be that way? And you go, yeah, it will be. Except that they'll do a far better job of making sure that they've got a police state running to make sure that you stay in your place and you behave the way you're supposed to behave and you don't bother better people. Those of you who are very, very well behaved will get the perk of being the servants of the best people. And you go, well, that sounds horrible. And you go, well, anyway, see, I get caught up in this. It's a hard thing because I actually have I can put myself in the collectivist shoes. I'm not good for fighting against collectivism particularly, because I can tell you what they're thinking, and I can help you with the tactics that are going to be used. But I'm going to be hard-pressed, because I'm going to be one of those guys that says that I'm going to be in a nice place. And I'm going to, you know, and I don't... I want to be up there where Christ is. Thank you. have angels? Yeah. Am I going to have this? I'm going to have all those things. That's my intention. That's what I'm kind of shooting for. Now, whether I make it or not is a whole other issue, because it takes a lot of being like Christ to get to where Christ is, and I need to work on that. It's that simple. This means you have to be a really amazingly fantastic king over your subjects. Diametrically opposed worldviews. The new woke culture, which is all about finding oppression and stomping it out, which is kind of a new take on Marxism, which is not so much an economic thing as it is a cultural thing, I guess now. That's what Dan Matson would say. You have to not get sucked into it. It's easy to get sucked into it. It's very alluring. But you have to be able to remain Joseph Smith said aloof. That doesn't sound good to people's ears today. Sounds like you're a hoity-toity. It sounds like you think you're better than other people are. And you go, no, I don't know if it's higher or not. It says, I just want to remain me. I don't want to give myself over to something else. And now that's becoming a really bad thing. We can't tolerate people doing this. Everybody has to be a part of it. Everybody has to contribute. There are no exemptions. Anyway, and that's the problem of the collectivists, is that all of its misery has to be spread as equally as can be contrived. Of course, is it ever equal? No. Are people going to suffer less? Oh, yes. You know, top party officials, top old Soviet party officials had some nice stuff. Now, it wasn't particularly comparable to the nice stuff that well-to-do capitalists could manage. Because socialism really doesn't generate. Of course, you've got to be careful because you're constantly surrounded by propaganda. And let me tell you, maybe that's why I can so easily, you know, sound like a collectivist and talk you into it really easily. And you go, but it's wrong, it's evil, don't do it. And you go, I'm confused. You just talked me into it, Nemro. And it's like, I struggle to stop myself from doing that. I prefer nice things to be in the hands of good people. That's why I'm actually not for term limits. I am not for term limits in government office, in elected positions. Because if you get a good person that's doing good things, why would you want to force them to stop doing it? Especially if they're still willing to. I am not so bad about the term limits for presidents. Although I wouldn't mind those going away either. If you get somebody that's really good and that really wants to make the changes, it's going to take a lot longer than 4 years or 8 years to really fix things. And if they're really able to do it, in the Book of Mormon, some of the best times in the Book of Mormon were ruled over by kings. There actually were judges, and there were really good judges. But it seemed like they were getting killed all the time by their brother or something like that. Of course, the judges started to feel like kings, or they started being treated like that. There was still a group of people that wanted to be kings. So if they could do whatever they wanted, wrong kind of king altogether. Regardless, that was the most amazing part. Probably the most blessed times among the Nephites were short of when Christ was among them, and we really don't know the conditions of things for the 200 years after Christ, where they said there was just peace. There was peace all the time. Started getting tired of counting all the years that there was peace. But anyway, the really great parts of it were under a leader named King Benjamin and then his son, King Mosiah. And apparently, before this time, were good kings, mostly because they were if not real descendants of Nephi, a fellow named Nephi, they were called after him, so they expect him to produce the kind of conditions that Nephi had produced. He was such an awesome leader. And those were the wonderful times. It came down to having judges. And I think the only thing that saved them was that it didn't seem like the judges could write new laws. They could only adjudicate the laws that Mosiah left behind, the last king. Apparently he was the last person that actually set up their law system and there were only judges after that. Everything was done through the laws set up by Mosiah, who was very righteous and set up a good kingdom. I don't mind a monarchy. Like I said before, I always kind of picture it as Downton Abbey, And there is the family, right? Lord Grantham, Lady Grantham, their children, That was practically my God. But a wonderful God, you know. He was a good guy. He had his problems. But that was mostly for drama's sake. Otherwise, he was a really good guy. And that is the top of the celestial kingdom. The second tier is those who are in service, those who serve God directly, the household. And then the third part of the celestial kingdom is the people who lived in the village under the management of the king. You know, now there's a whole God training program in there. A lot of people going through the program. Sorry, I feel like I'm being terribly repetitive. I don't want to be. So there was this wonderful talk about how, and it makes a lot of sense. It says there's really nothing you can do. You can't live cheek by jowl with these people. Now, we know from Scripture and Revelation that hope you can hear me. We know from Scripture and Revelation that there's going to be a division of the people. That the good people will still be around. And the bad people will be someplace else. You know, there will be a place called Zion, the New Jerusalem. At least on this continent. And it will be so righteous that evil won't be able to go there. I've always conjectured that it was because they will vomit uncontrollably if they even get close to it. And the closer they try to get, the more they will vomit. If they can't vomit up anything, they'll have the dry heaves at the point to where they can't even function. And you're going, they can't live like that, so they won't be able to live in Zion. Yeah, I don't know if it'll really work that way, but it's what I picture in my head. That'll be what's happening. And that appears to be the way that Christ is going to handle the issue of we just can't have the conditions of righteousness will be antithetical to the prevailing culture of the world. And they just simply will not be there. I don't know if they're going to constantly fight with each other. It'll eventually kill each other off. Until there are none of them left. We had this interesting situation with the Jaredites. They split into two factions. And it wasn't even a question of who was righteous and who wasn't. Neither one of them were righteous particularly. And kept going to war and kept killing and killing and killing. There were millions and millions of people who died. Apparently in one day there was 2 million people dying that day. In just the huge war between, it was Shiz and Coriantumr. And their factions. And ultimately it got down to where it was just Shiz and Corey Anne's where all the rest of them had died. And Corey Annemer finally knocked off Shiz's head, and that was it. There was nobody else there. And he was found by the Mulekites, and they got the records from him, or they got the records from, I don't know. Anyway. And he died among the Mulekites. And that was the end of this amazing long-term Jaredite nation. Lasted on the American continent for nearly, at least 2,500 years. Anyway, you get the impression that these things kind of go slowly and they're multi-generational. I think we are going through this at light speed, and that we're going to very quickly get to the point to where Christ is going to have to come, because he has to make good his promise to the righteous that they will be blessed if the collectivists take over. The righteous can't be blessed. All their stuff will be confiscated. You know, a lot of them will be in jail. You know, a lot of bad things will happen. Now, that doesn't mean that doesn't happen under Christ. The Book of Mormon is rife with righteous people being put into horrible situations, even in slavery, bondage. And it's over. So, one has to remember that it's not going to be a nice thing. Christ isn't, you know. And people say, "Well, Christ, I would really be great if Christ came soon." And I agree. It really would be great if Christ came soon. Took care of this. I don't know where I would stand on it. I'm not altogether positive. You know, I said, "Oh, you're not hopeful. You're not having faith in Christ." You go, the problem isn't with Christ. I know Christ is going to do the right thing. The question is, do I deserve it? Have I done what Christ wants me to do to that level? And I don't know. I would have to say probably not. And I don't expect it to go well for me particularly. Christ is the judge, thank goodness. If I were my judge, I'd be condemned and I'd go straight to hell. So I'm grateful that he's going to be the one doing it, because he'll be far more even-handed with me than I will be with myself. Anyway, which I'm sure Lisa would be more than happy to say. Anyway, so, what a world. So, I would anticipate some suffering and bad things happening. And when they say, "Oh, the United States isn't going to fall," and you're going, "Well," I said, "I think certain aspects of it are going to struggle pretty mightily. And there's going to be some bad stuff going on." I don't know. I don't know if Zion will be the successor state of the United States. I don't know if the United States will morph into Zion. Of course, it's in the middle of the country. It's in that flyover area where Zion, at least Jackson County, Missouri, is supposed to be. It is. That was what Joseph Smith said was the land of Zion. But I think it's supposed to be built up from the waste places. So, Kansas City, Missouri, Kansas, border. I'm sad to say that it's not going to fare very well out of all of this, because it's going to get it. If it were me, I would live there. because bad things are going to happen there before it becomes, before Zion is established. It's not like you can go ahead and buy your McMansion in the outskirts of Independence, Missouri, and, you know, just say, hey, I'm ready. Come on, let's bring it on. Pray for Zion. I'm already started. Look at this beautiful house. I don't know. But I'm not, you know, I'm going to wait until they call me up, or if they never call me up, then I never go. You know, I'm not going to try to get ahead of the Lord on that one. Oh, I tell you. So, people think there might be a big civil war, and I'm not saying that there won't be, although it doesn't sound like prophecy that will be the special feature of this. It doesn't seem like that's how it's going to go. But going to be wars and rumors of wars that didn't say where they were going to be or where they weren't going to be. Well, regardless, it is really hard to see how wokeism is going to be overcome. Because it does such an amazing job of shutting down the opposition. Nobody wants to look back. And I'm sorry, you know, and I can't say that I'm immune to that. Although I'm getting better at just saying, I don't care, you can call me bad all you want to, and it's not gonna stop me. Getting far more poignant about it. Although I have my job as a contractor here in Albuquerque, why I still go to the crash site and sleep on the boat. I'm not actively searching for other work. I'm grateful for this job that I have, but there are the occasional contacts that I get, and I don't tell anybody no, because I really don't know how God is going to bless me or how that's going to look. So I always leave those options open. There is another job at Sandia that pays quite a bit more than the job I have now that apparently I'm being considered for. I haven't done the interview yet. Just a few days ago, I got a contact from somebody who wanted a contract system administrator. I don't know any of the details of it. But it would be a remote job, and it's like, well, hey, I wouldn't mind getting rid of all this driving. It takes up a ton of time. I'm not sure it's a good spending of my time. lot of money gets spent in gas going back and forth to this job. I wouldn't mind avoiding that too. This one's a pure contract job, which means they just pay me and they don't take anything out in taxes or anything. I don't have to take care of my own taxes. I put it for $65 an hour. I've been looking for the 50s before, but I decided since this one wasn't going to give me any benefits at all, I needed to ask for more. I'm going to get hit pretty hard on, it's going to be self-employment tax, which is double what FICA and Medicaid tax are. It's twice as much. So that's kind of painful. Anyway, so yeah, I do that because I don't know what Heavenly Father's going to do. I pray every time I go into these situations that Heavenly Father will watch over me and help me to have the things that they need. That means that none of these things may happen. And I'll continue doing this work. And this drive, this commute, and sleeping out at the crash site for a lot longer. If other things don't work out, you know, and don't get weird about it. It's just not worth getting weird about. And that the Lord will take good care of you as much as he can. Well, regardless, we'll see what comes of that. I'm getting to the Estancia turnoff. I got this crazy idea. And it comes from something that I did on my mission. And I've been looking at my patriarchal blessing, and I said, what if this little part about being the Lord's emissary in the earth didn't just talk about my mission? I have a companion still. It talked about me being able to live in peace and harmony with my companion. And my companion now is Lisa Nemro, my wonderful wife. And thinking that it might be good, because I know this happens, and I've done it a few times in the past, where I'll go to a little branch, like Fort Sumner, I'll go to Fort Sumner branch, and they'll say, hey, do you want to speak? And you go, yeah. And so you get up and you speak, and they're really glad, because, you know, in little itty-bitty branches, sometimes it's hard to get speakers to come out and see them. And it seems to be the same speakers over and over again, and they would just love to have fresh blood. When I was on my mission in Utah, 35 years ago, over 35 years ago, I've been married for 35 years, over 35 years ago, I would go into my area, I think I only really did this very amazingly in Spanish Fork, where I would go out and I would do talks all the time. I don't know if I did it in any other areas particularly. I think I did it in Tualatin. I think that's where that kind of started. And then when I took over Spanish Fork, I started doing that. I don't remember what possessed me to. I don't know if it's something somebody told me or something else. But it was like, you know what? It says we need to be out and about. People need to know that we're here. There was a lot of Latter-day Saints. It was like 95% Latter-day Saints back then. Now it's not so much, but it was then. And the whole concept of having missionaries in your area was somewhat new. Still, there was a whole lot of people who said, what? Well, we don't have missionaries here. We send them out. We don't have them here. And you go, well, you know, we covered 5 stakes, 50-something wards, and give talks all the time. And we would, one time, I forget, I think we did 6 talks in one Sunday. Had to go on splits. Just happened to work out. Didn't plan it. Didn't push to do it. Anything like that. Just did a whole heck of a lot of talks. And my poor companions, I don't know how they felt about it, to be honest. Regardless, I've been thinking that I need to do that again. In these little branches, they're always hard up for speakers. And you have to have speakers, you know, most Sundays. You know, you don't need them for Fast Sunday, Fast Testimony Meeting. Oh, they may not be very hard, you know. They may like having somebody come and visit and bear their testimony. I don't know. And then, it used to be a big thing that stakes would have high counselors come every month because you usually had one high counselor for each assigned unit, for each unit. And so every single month, like clockwork, they would come and they would speak. And in our stake, that kind of has gone by the wayside. But I don't know if they're trying to bring it back or what. I don't know if the branch president started yelling and going, we really need more speakers. If you could send a high counselor every month to come see us, that'd be great. Anyway, I made a list today because I said, you know what? What if I started offering to do talks and all these smaller units, these little bitty wards, little bitty branches, and how much they would love to have people come and visit and spend time with them. And to just offer to them and say, If ever you need somebody, if ever you're hard up for a speaker, he said, you can call us and we'll come. And we'll come, and this is kind of what we do on the weekends. This places that we go and we travel around. I like to travel. I don't know what Lisa likes to do. But, you know, we always try to live in little branches or in little wards where we're needed. And it seems like in our branch in Tucumcari, we kind of got put out to pasture. That we're not really needed anymore. So it's like, wow, if I'm not needed here, and I can be of some use someplace else, maybe. And I came up with, I think, 17 units within 200 miles of us. Mostly branches. Some of the wards I know are quite small, like Taos, the one that my daughter goes to. That's a small ward. Any place else, it would be a branch. For just not having a lot of speakers. And offer to speak to them. This is not a high counselor, not a high priest. You know. Interesting new stories to tell. Gospel. Gospel preaching. Bring the Spirit. And then your own branch can say, you know, if you want me to come to town, you know. You know, this is the way you make sure I'm going to be in town is, you know, do you want me to speak? Do you need me to teach a lesson? Lead a discussion. So this is kind of, so I kind of talked to Lisa about this, and she didn't have much to say about it. I guess I was framing it in because she goes, you know, I'm really just not interested in going to the branch much. They don't need me there. And it seems like that when I do speak up, I'm troubled. And they just want me to shut up. So it's like, you know what? If at least I think we can arrange not to be there. We can start doing this. I said, you know, this isn't the kind of area authority thing. It really feels more like being some kind of weird offshoot of a high counselor, but not sent by your stake president. And of course, I've got interesting experiences, interesting stories to tell. And of course, I'm this weird, ironic priest. And you go, you know, well, it's just, like, I go to the temple a lot, and I serve there, but have some other things to do, you know. You go, so I'm trying to be helpful in something that really, I feel like, always has a hole in there, is who are people going to get to speak? Has it gotten to the point to where it's just the branch president's family? Because he doesn't want to go through the crap of having to come up with speakers. and a good portion of people might just come up and say, no, I'm not going to speak. And you go, well, here's somebody that doesn't mind speaking. We'll speak whenever you need to. Under whatever circumstances you're under. If you had somebody and they all of a sudden call and say, I'm sick, I can't go speak. And you go, oh man, I don't want to speak. And you go, dang it, call Nemro. Nemro will come speak. And you go, I will. Happy to. I consider this a borderline mission. This is what I did on my mission a lot. I spent most of my Sundays speaking. And speaking sometimes 2, 3, 4 times. Not to say talk every time. I'm accustomed to traveling in this part of the country. House used to be in my area when I used to travel for work. Anyway, so that's something that I've been poking around with maybe for a couple of days here. I don't know how Lisa feels. I was trying to turn it into something that would be pleasant for her. And she was more of, well, if we could stay in motels while we were, you know, if we could go up on a Saturday evening to some of these places. And then, you know, stay the night at some place. I said, well, I said, you know, so I think it would be more useful for us to get ourselves a little camper, trailer, something. And I started reading about itinerant preachers. You know, I used to be the old circuit riders. And it's like, gee, should I style myself as kind of a circuit rider? You know, I wouldn't just come around, you know, I need to be invited. That's important. And then there's a little thing in the back of my head that says, you know, you could offer to preach at some of these really tiny little churches. You know, where it's like on most first Sundays of every month, or you know, a certain date, the Methodist preacher comes and preaches him a sermon here at the Iowa Church. And then the next time around, the Baptist preacher comes, and you go, hey, oh, I want to preach Joseph Smith, the Book of Mormon. Well, we'll tell people you're coming. I don't know anybody who will come. They go, well, feel free. I'll preach you a sermon. So, there goes that. So, I'm sorry, I'm taking these long breaks. I'm on the far side of Mount Air now, going through Abo, and going to get me in the crash site soon enough. But, I've been pondering that alongside my blog posts. I just finished another one today. I don't do one every week. It used to be I could do one about every week or so. I have to say that I put out, and I advertise this stuff on Facebook. I don't know really how good of advertising that is. I'm not surprised if the algorithm, frankly, kind of just buries me. Or if people just say, oh, we don't want to hear this from this guy. Anyway, so we'll see what comes of it. I did this during the talks at Sacrament meeting. Not that I think the talks were bad at all, but you know, when you get inspiration, it's good to go ahead and go with your inspiration. And I actually looked up itinerant preacher on the web, and of course I got some things for how to do it today. And of course, they said, well, Christ was something of an itinerant preacher. And you go, well, it's true. He would go to a synagogue, and he'd go and he'd speak in the synagogue. In the traditional style that you would do in a synagogue, you know, read read a Torah passage and then expound on it. And Christ would do that. To the angst of, you know, the elders in the synagogue. You know, I don't know if I would be kind of an angsty person too. And it talked about, you know, sending out a newsletter, getting an email list, get something like that, and advertise yourself, print up cards or something. I don't know if I'm supposed to print up cards with Latter-day Saint congregations. That's kind of pompous. I'm not sure exactly what you should do in those situations. Except actually come. Don't just try to get their email messages, stuff like that. You know, collect emails as much as you can. Add people to your mailing list. Know that you're going to do good, you're going to do bad, you're going to get some stuff, and you have a lot of people say, "Will you please take me off that list?" And you go, "That's fine." You go, "I don't sell a darn thing." I said, "I put up blog posts occasionally, keep things going, always available for speaking, leading discussions." Road work ahead. Good golly, reduce speed 35 miles an hour. Oh, great. Anyway, okay. Well, that's why I don't take this back road very often. Bernardo's still 25 miles off, which is the closest location to the crash site that anybody knows about. Anybody who knows anything. Anyway. So yeah, there was all about that, about how, like the Pentecostals, stuff like that, do their itinerant preachers. And I said, you know what, I wonder if this could be modified a bit to suit a more Latter-day Saint sensibility. There's certain cultural differences that they don't take to being treated this way. You know, it's much more, you know, the bishop makes all those kinds of arrangements. You go, yeah, that's how it works. So, pondered that. I figure I better take Lisa with me. Weekends are the times that we have together right now. Now, if I get the job, the remote job, and stay in town during the week and work there, Lisa may be really good about saying, "Jason, you just go, just leave. I don't want to mess with you. You can go off and do your traveling, and I'll see you Sunday night." But one of the ideas that really kind of motivated this was the fact that Lisa felt like, you know, what are we doing here? What exactly is the point? And you're going, well, let me tell you, we are in the middle of nowhere. And I'm an interesting figure, and can I be honest? I can be reasonably un-Latter-day Saint-ish. But of course, preach Christ in America. Preach miracles. Preach the Book of Mormon. That young fellow, Joseph Smith, the translated by the power of God. Because I know there's a lot of communities, pretty good sized communities. Moreover, in Texas, but, you know, everywhere in this area that you know, that there needs to be more Latter-day Saints. They're pretty thin around here. And you go, do something about that. And I can always put myself forward truthfully, honestly, as an erotic priest. You know, I'm not up here trying to make like I'm some kind of prophet, or some kind of an apostle, or some kind of an evangelist. Said, I am a simple priest without a temple, without temple rites to do for my people. I'm going to tell you what I found. It says, you know, I'm one of those Jews that thinks Jesus is the Son. And they might say, well, that's interesting. Let's hear about that. No, I sure as heck will. I have to. it's interesting. I'm just sitting here thinking about it. So, you know, I bet you there's some community church up in Roy. It says that we can talk about, you know, he said there's a Book of Mormons. You know the guys. Says, you know, if you'd like, if that sounds intriguing to you at all, says, I can have somebody get you a Book of Mormon and bring it to you. Says, you, I'll tell you what I know is true. It's a true book. Book written by prophets, translated by a man, the inspiration of heaven. Brought to us, for us in our time. Bless our lives. Another testament of Jesus Christ. Wow. Just felt like me. Whenever I think of it. Anyway, that sounds like that might be an awfully interesting thing to do. So I do. I think about that, and it's like, you know what? Maybe if I could get some kind of a rig that would make Lisa at least quarter way happy. Give her a place to pee. Give her a place to go take a shower. Go on at least these overnighters. Sometimes it's like, let's go on a Friday and go up and get everything going. Check out places, meet people. That's an important thing, since we need to meet people. So, that's one of the things I've been thinking about, pondering. Something needs some prayer to be done to it. Maybe you need to find the old something to haul the trailer. Anyway, so I tell you, I might be grateful for that kind of stuff. If you want to talk about politics? That's just a mess. These days. So don't talk about that. Still want to talk about Christ. That's something upon which we can all agree. Christ is good. Christ wants some things out of us. Christ has some more things to tell us. Bible is all there is. I got to tell you, there's more. We're just born. We have more records to come. It's a wonderful thing. I'm going to tell you about one. Young fella, upstate New York, somebody who's interested in religion and wants to do the right thing and wants to know the church when he's 14 years old. Isn't that wonderful? Don't you wish your kids were born like that? Maybe some of them are. As I think about it, as I pray about it, we'll see if that becomes a thing. And it kind of does. And, boy, I'm just right on top of the crash site. I'm about ready to draw off the road. It gets really bumpy, and it gets loud and noisy, and we're just going to let that go. So I will talk to you another time. We'll make another recording, as always. And talk to you later. Bye.